This is the May 7 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Garrett Toy from AgTraderTalk.com. He's out of Warren, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlo, GlobalCommResearch.com in Atchison, Kansas, joins us as well. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Online on demand at willag.org, WILLAG.ORG. Gentlemen, let's start with a list of items that we should discuss for the day. Mike Zuzlo, we'll begin with you, but if you could you outline what crop conditions are like in your area today first, please?
I would say here in northeast Kansas, right along the river where it's mainly corn and bean country, Todd, we've been blessed with a very heavy, timely rainfall pattern the month of April. And most of the planting is done. Crops are probably going to start shooting through the ground here in the next few days because we have started to warm up as well. But it dries out very quickly as you get west of Topeka. And as you go southwest, it seems to get worse and worse, where I'm hearing a lot of abandonment. You and I have talked about that on the program before. And I'm putting the abandonment at about 20%. And in Nebraska, where the wheat very poor conditions are probably closer to 70%. I wouldn't be surprised to see abandonment going upwards of 40% at this point, if I had to guess.
In total, you mean across the whole of the hard red winter wheat crop?
Of the wheat in Nebraska. Yeah, they're about 90.
Oh, you mean in Nebraska.
Yeah, I'd say 20% overall, but a state like Nebraska may be closer to 40%, if you ask me.
And I suspect that's something we ought to talk about, but what is on your list?
If we have to. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, it's still a wheat weather-driven market, but we also have quite a few big ticket items coming in next week that... be interested to see what Garrett has to say about that as well.
Garrett Toy, what are the conditions in your part of the world there, I believe, in northwestern Illinois?
Yes, we're up here in Joe Davis County, right up in the tri-state area. And after a wet start of April, there was really no early corn planted up in our neck of the woods. We've had a period of about 10 days that, most of the planting is getting done. I think we're probably in the mid to 75% half of planting up here. We're getting it done, and we was working on the planter this morning and trying to get some things dialed in on technical issues, if you will, and gotta love computers. But the ground is very mellow, and it's wet underneath. There's some wet spots out there, but the forecast has been beneficial enough that we've been getting to get planting done. The only thing that benefited us more is a warm up. We had white on the ground frost on Saturday morning and lows coming into work this morning were 32 degrees as well. So, warm up and temperatures. I know that there were some early planted beans that probably got nipped, with frost and have to be replanted. But, for the most part, we're looking in pretty decent shape right now.
And what is on your list we should discuss for the program today?
Well, Mike alluded to it. We have the USD report, and then we have this Trump-Xi meeting in China and whatever may come of that, if anything. But I think, and obviously macros, because it seems like the ag markets are heavily influenced by what this crude market wants to do. And I think there's some underlying inflationary support here, while fundamentals don't really support anything bullish in corn and soybeans at the moment.
Mike, let's pick up with the hard red winter wheat crop. Does it matter very much that Kansas, Oklahoma, Colorado are in trouble, the primary growing region in the United States for HRW, given the amount of wheat that is available across the planet in any given month of the year?
I think it does, Todd, and I think you hit upon the key to going forward the next 4 or 5 months, and whether the price action, if we go down because the crude oil market and the wheat market lead us lower, do we go down and that's a top, or is it a correction? And I'm in the mindset that this is a correction overall because the supplies in both wheat and crude oil are still going down. And what we're facing is a lag effect in the market of having ample, if not near record, supplies of crude on the water that we've now drawn down. I'm hearing numbers like 200 million barrels have been sucked up here in the last 60 days off the ocean in tankers that have been floating storage. I see a very similar pattern in the wheat, and this goes back to when you and I talked back near Thanksgiving at the NAFB meeting in Kansas City, where wheat and crude were the two leaders to the downside because of an oversupply mindset, and the market got jolted and shocked out of that mindset because of what happened in the Middle East. But I would argue now, because of the hard red wheat weather market, it's starting to be that same type or similar pattern of supply falling faster than demand in the wheat market. And I say that because with hard red wheat making up 40% typically of the all wheat production, if I'm correct, and the all wheat yield is around 45, 45 and a half bushels, one of the lowest since 2021, 2022. That would put you at about a 1.65, 1.64 billion bushel production number, which would take you down closer to a 700 million bushel carryover. That was last seen since 2023, 2024 marketing year, and we had an average price of near $7. And so I do think that the wheat still is the leader with the crude because of this supply glut now turning to supply tightness as we go forward the next few months.
Garrett, let's continue this wheat conversation. Oklahoma took a look at its wheat this week, and that number came in really, really low.
Yeah, well below the 10-year average. I agree with Mike that wheat and crude kind of were tied to the hip together. And it's the first week of May, so we're not into harvest yet, and there's still the supply questions out there. The timing wise of it though, I'm a little concerned. Because I don't believe that it would take much to ration demand. You look at world FOB prices, while Chicago and Kansas City have been rallying, French wheat, Russian wheat, Black Sea wheat have moved very little. And the U.S. wheat is, $20 to $30 a ton, more expensive on the world front. We're not at the point where, that's going to concern anybody at this point, but it was interesting to me. We just had first notice day for the May delivery cycle, and even though we were in the throes of this hot money flow into the wheat market, both Chicago and KC, we had nearly 5 million bushel of wheat delivered against the May contract, which potentially create some questions as far as what are commercials thinking if we're having such a supply issue. Why are they willing to put 5 million bushel out on the street? And now we do have some stoppers showing up in Kansas City, but just definitely mixed messages. And once we get into the delivery period, sometimes that's when the commercials kind of take over control of the managed money. Maybe running with a bullish story, the commercials may try to rein things in here a little bit.
Do you think that's what they were doing, or do they actually have the supply?
Well, that's the thing is that it sends the message that they have enough ownership and inventory that they're not necessarily concerned about the production issues there, right, wrong, or indifferent. But the commercials are running their own S&Ds and production estimates, and if there really was a big issue, and I do believe that there is an issue, I think they're kind of telegraphing that they are concerned about these demand sides down the road, and that ultimately they'll be able to fulfill.
Mike, can you help fill in where you think we might be headed for wheat, given everything he's discussed?
Right. I think he's spot on with what he talked about with the commercials. I think it's gotten to the point where we just don't worry about the wheat being in tight supply until it is in tight supply. And it just really does remind me a lot about the crude oil market and how, traders back in February, January, February, were talking about how we could, strike $30, $35 a barrel because we had so much excess supply and so little demand. And what we have found in the old days, I think we'll probably find again because we have higher interest rates that are going to last longer. That means higher inflation that's going to last longer. I think our commercial system is going to have to adjust back to where it was back in the 80s and 90s when we had these same conditions in money flows, even with the algo trade. And that is, you better buy a little bit of extra here and don't just try and buy hand to mouth, especially if supplies are on a trend to tighten up. So I do think it's a lag. And I think Garrett brings up a great point because, you got to know when you're right, when you're wrong, when you're doing analysis. And for me, Todd, a lot will matter about next week and whether we even have a meeting between Trump and Xi, how the beans react to that. And then going back to the wheat and the grains as a whole, does the trade recognize 60 days from now or 30 days from now, especially with the USDA giving us new 26, 27 numbers next week and having lower acreage numbers going down below 44 million on all wheat? Is that the catalyst that gets them to change their mindset and say, oh, yeah, we are tighter? And it's just going to get tighter the next 6 months because the fertilizer prices are taking Australia's acres down, Romania's acres down, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's, we're in the throes of that, I think, right now, and we'll know pretty soon.
You mentioned a couple of decades, the 80s and the 90s. I'd like some clarification. Did you mean those decades, or did you mean the 70s and 80s?
Yeah, I mean, I was more talking about the 80s and 90s because I started in 95, and I remember doing a lot of research when I first got into the business. And when I, had to take the brokerage test, the price of grain included storage and interest costs. Well, that interest cost went bye-bye, because of the 90s and into the 2000s. And so, yeah, sure, you can say 70s and 80s because that's probably more appropriate.
So may I ask like a question is with this wheat abandonment as a cattle feeder, what do you, is this going to be cattle feed or what will those producers do with those abandoned acres,
Yeah, that's a good
in your
question
opinion?
because it's going to differ, I think, Garrett, because I think there's going to be some that will go ahead and finish, try and get crop insurance out of it. But I do think that in Southwest Kansas, for instance, I've heard some anecdotal evidence that they'll probably just not harvest it and take the full hit and get whatever they can out of it and abandon it and not really try and put anything into it. There are, I think, going to be some producers, and there's supposed to be some rains coming into Oklahoma. Some of the drier areas of Oklahoma that maybe will encourage them to rip up wheat and put beans in. That's something I'll be looking at.
Interesting. Thank you.
Garrett, there are two events of importance next week, as we've already alluded to, the WASDE or World Ag Supply and Demand Estimate on Tuesday. That will include USDA's first look at new crop corn and soybean S&D tables or supply and demand tables. And then, of course, the President Xi President Trump meeting, which is scheduled for Thursday. What are your thoughts?
One's going to probably have a bigger influence than the other. I'll let you guess which one's that. It's going to be the Xi Trump meeting that the market's going to be focused on. Obviously with new crop production estimates, they're large, they're all forecasts. I did see the trade guesses out this morning. I do see some, it looks like some people trying to deviate from the USDA yields, but as long as we're 50% planted by the 10th of May, I don't see the USDA adjusting corn yield. We can get to the US report later. The thing is this meeting between Xi and Trump. It's interesting to me. We had to sell off. These ag markets are all trading relative to crude. Crude was down hard. Ags were down hard. And the fact that this meeting at this point does appear to be still happening, and I would think that soybeans would be a little bit more supported in here on optimism. We go back to February, and that really is what put that short-term high in the market was the fact that this meeting was delayed or going to potentially be canceled. And that's what kind of, caused us the breakdown there for 30 to 45 days. And now here we are on the cusp of the meeting, and we're 30, 40 cents off the highs. So, where are we going to be at? The one thing that in the back of my mind that's very interesting is, China is just staying hand to mouth on their soybean purchases. If the retaliatory tariffs went away today, Brazilian beans would still be $20 a ton cheaper than U.S. soybeans. And it's not lost on me. In the back of my mind, I'm concerned that between the fertilizer issues and things of that sort, maybe some wet areas early on, that if we bought additional soybean acres, last fall the report was that 12 million metric ton plus 25, 25, 25. They have not bought one bushel of new crop beans when this 25 million metric ton whatever marketing year it's attributed to or whatever calendar year it's attributed to, you know, we need to have some movement there, some purchases. And I don't know if that comes out of this meeting. You know, I don't personally believe that, you know, soybeans are going to be the key topic of conversation. I know that there's some feed grain issues there with, you know, they've been buying tremendous amounts of wheat on the world market. They had wetness issues in their corn crop, and they've got quality issues that they're blending that wheat off with. You know, and they've even made statements themselves that, you know, they're willing to look at additional ag purchases, but soybeans probably won't be it, which is kind of a direct counter statement to President Trump's social media post back in February that China was going to potentially buy another 8 million additional tons, which has not come to fruition. So, you know, I think that sorghum may be on the market, corn may be in the market, you know, other ag products, but I wouldn't necessarily get hopes up on soybeans per se. But, you know, then now you throw the Iranian war in there, and it maybe, you know, ags went from being one of the top of the things on the list to talk about to probably be in 3 or 4 or 5 down the list at this point. So,
well, that may very well be the case, Mike. I did make note that there has been a lot of chatter about U.S. beef being exported to China. However, I made note too that Brazilian beef was at a record import level into the United States last month.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you bring that up because the Brazilians just hit their TRQ with China, and we're starting to get more nervous in the beef sector of seeing more, even more Brazilian beef come to the United States, because that's going to really cut back on what China's going to purchase, hitting that tariff rate quota. And I would say, to Garrett's point, you know, we have seen the July beans essentially go, when it comes to their premium, their inversion to the new crop November since the middle of March, from about 80 cents down to 20 cents. And so the spread has clearly said we're losing demand, and it is being soaked up by domestic demand with the biodiesel coming online slowly. But, you know, just on a supply demand standpoint, with Brazil's excess capacity of exports because of their big crop, and given that China's still trying to trim their hog production, their crush margins in some areas, like the Dalian area that I keep track of, Todd, their crush margins to about negative 25 bucks a ton right now, based upon the last number I've seen. And that gets you down to some of the lows from 2025. And it just doesn't add up that we're going to see a lot come from China when it comes to true supply demand. Will they fulfill their earlier obligations like Garrett was talking about? Maybe, but that's if they meet. And I think this is where this week, and especially on Thursday, the reaction time in the markets and the news coming out almost every hour on the hour about the conflict ending in the Strait of Hormuz. I've been under the working assumption that the meeting between Trump and Xi is not going to happen, or it's a 50-50 chance if the strait stays closed. Why? Because most of President Trump's foreign policy, whether it's Venezuela, whether it's Iran, pick your poison, it's really been targeted towards China, and the market gets that, but they aren't worried about that yet. It just seems to me they should be a little bit more nervous than they are. And that's kind of what I'm waiting to see, is even if this meeting happens, if indeed, as we're hearing late Thursday, there may be the resumption of not just the transit of the ships going through the strait with the help of the United States Navy. That opens up Iran firing on the U.S. again, but also the talk in some reports in Iran that there's actually some conflict resuming at this point. So it's so fluid that it just really makes me wonder, why would President Trump go over there? Why wouldn't he just say, look, I can't go. We're in the middle of this. I thought it was over. I thought I was going to get help. There's news out there, and I'll finish with this. There's news out there that the UN resolution that the U.S. was going to put out was probably going to be vetoed by China and Russia, talking about demanding Iran halts its attack on non-military ships. And so it's getting, I think, to such a point now. The market's really going to be, I think, so volatile, we probably don't understand it at this point.
Garrett, the United States military activities this calendar year have cut off the supply of oil from Iran and Venezuela to China. Do you think that that will impact their economy in such a way that they might see demand destruction there?
Well, they have issues of their own with, you know, the housing crisis and things of that sort. But as far as hitting China in their oil pocketbooks per se, I don't think they're necessarily feeling it. I mean, in fact, their strategic reserves are some of the largest in the world. And they've adjusted to their import, or excuse me, the export bans, and they're allowing us a little bit more flow. But you're absolutely right. Venezuela, two of the major oil suppliers to China have had military actions against them by the U.S. in the last 6 months. Mike brought up a good point and actually kind of jogged the memory how, you know, we've got this disconnect between futures markets and cash prices. Crude's $90 a barrel on the NYMEX, but gasoline is almost $5. It's $5 here locally. And it kind of reminds me of like 2012, the 2012 corn market, where the futures market didn't reflect it, but the rest was made up in basis and in cash. And, maybe some oil traders are going to maybe learn this lesson about the difference between physical barrels and paper barrels, because, it's very difficult, the amount of volatility, headline driven trade where the market moves and then you see the headline out there, I think you're going to get to a point where you're going to shake, trade confidence, where people just aren't going to trade it anymore because they don't know when the next, fake headline or real headline or whatever headline comes out is influencing this trade. But at the end of the day, regardless of any headlines, as long as this trade is closed, that's bad news. this trade has to open very soon, or we're going to, I don't want to be doom and gloom, but it's kind of like COVID. When you shut down a factory, and then reopen it, once you resume production of that factory, you have to produce X amount of widgets plus whatever widgets that you lost to the shutdown. And to look at it that way, I mean, not only do we have to get resumption of flows of oil out of the region elsewhere, but we have to replace that plus X amount to just replace what we've drawn down in world supplies. So, the longer this strait is closed, the more pessimistic I am on crude prices or physical energy prices, short term, and then obviously the economy and inflation and everything else. It's all one big ball of wax.
Yeah, and I think too, Todd, the point that Garrett brings up is in terms of hard data, as far as whether we're actually rationing demand right now or whether supply is falling faster, we've covered the wheat pretty well. But as far as the crude oil, I think it was S&P Global came out this week and said global oil reserves, for the month of April, the losses are 6.6 million barrels a day versus their expectation that we're only rationing 5 million a day. And the total losses are now up around a billion barrels at this point. I really think, like Garrett's kind of alluding to, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, Garrett, but it's going to get real, really fast here as far as if that strait stays closed, because we used to get out 21 plus million barrels a day out of the Persian Gulf. The latest numbers I saw is we're barely getting 8.5 million out, and we can't make up the difference. So we're still shy, probably anywhere from 5 to 8 million barrels a day from all that we've been doing here and everywhere else around the world. And that includes demand rationing. So I think that we have to remember that's going to follow through into diesel, fertilizer, chemical prices. And that's why I think these wheat numbers are going down as far as supplies.
Mike couldn't have said it better. I didn't want to sound alarmist. I didn't want to allude to, but that's exactly right. Distillate stocks, diesel stocks were tight even before the situation in Iran. So that's why diesel's reacted the way it was, and fertilizer obviously as well.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com in Atchison, Kansas. I'll start with you.
Yeah, very plain spoken English here, Todd. In my mind, everything you do, if you need to do something because we lose technical support for whatever reason heading into the end of this week, I'm going to recommend doing paper positions. Again, thinking it's more of a correction or than a top in the price action. So I that's how I would recommend it, generally speaking, is do as little cash as possible until we know a lot more.
And the Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com out of Warren, Illinois, your final word.
We're in the same situation. We made some cash sales. Now we're moving the paper. For producers who are still sitting here with old crop corn, the clock is, we still have a large carryout, and I feel the clock is ticking here. The old crop seasonality is built in here into the middle of June. Once that carryout moves, that may be more important than what the new crop is, as we make positions or make storage available for that new crop. So, especially we've had some decent basis improvements here, but new crop sales are being a little bit more patient, but we're being a little bit more aggressive on old crop sales just because of the size of the old crop carryout.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Mike Zuzulo and Garrett Toy. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.